Welcome to Deep Roots, the podcast from Oak Hill College, where we sit down and have conversations about theology and ministry. My name's Johnny Reed. I'm a director of engagement here at Oak Hill. And it's my joy to welcome back to the chairs, Andrew Nichols, who's our director of pastoral care. Andrew, it'd be great, just give us a bit more background to you. It'd be great to hear a bit more of your story, from sort of coming to trust in Jesus to sitting here now, working here at Oak Hill.
Sure. It's lovely to be here. I was brought up in a Christian family, went to church every week and went all through school, believing myself to be a Christian, calling myself a Christian. And I think I was a pretty Pharisaical one, if I can put it that way. I would look down on people who had different views of life. When I got to university, I'd noticed people in the Christian Union who had a quite different kind of Christianity from what I labelled myself as, because I vividly remember going to a prayer meeting in the college. I'd been encouraged to go, and it was a room full of people who were talking to somebody they knew. And I didn't have that relationship with God. I didn't feel that I did. Back in my teens, I'd made some kind of meaningful response to the cross. I was grateful for Jesus, and I don't think that was inauthentic. I think that was right, but there was a piece missing still, and that piece fitted into place just before my second year at university, when a speaker with the Christian Union sort of went away for a few days before the beginning of the university year. And the speaker made really clear what the Lordship of Jesus meant. And I think probably the easy way to summarize is that back in my teens, I'd understood Christ as Savior. At that point, I understood Christ as Lord. And on that night of those few days away, I surrendered and said, my life must belong to you, by the grace of God. I remember vividly the song we were singing, and it felt like it's now or never.
What was the song?
Shine, Jesus, shine.
What a song.
What a song. From that moment, I felt that this was a God that I also now knew, and learned to pray and so on. Well, not long after that, I had grown up in a Methodist church background. I was still at that stage going along to a Methodist church, and someone put it to the student Methodist group. A visiting speaker, a Methodist minister from up north somewhere, came and said, if you are articulate, and you are, you wouldn't be here at university. And if you have a faith, and you are, you wouldn't be here in the student Methodist group. That may be a call to preach. And that really struck me. I remember that phrase. He repeated it a number of times. It was great pedagogy. But it really stayed in my soul, actually. And actually, my father and his father before him had been Methodist local preachers. That was the route that I started training, and I completed my training as Methodist local preacher. But as I grew a little bit more, I was mainly in Bible teaching Anglican churches, and I was trying to think, who am I? Am I Methodist? Am I an Anglican? I eventually decided that I was neither. I was Christian, I was evangelical, but I didn't then pursue training either through Anglican ordination or Methodist church. So I don't really know who I am. But as a Christian, I have valued the chance to... At university, I was studying medicine, and I had 10 years as a doctor. And during that time, I began to think that the preaching I'd been doing as a lay preacher, effectively as a hobby, you know, alongside a career, that's how it works, obviously, in the Methodist Church, typically. But I began to think that maybe I should be doing a bit more than that, whether in fact I would be a doctor all my life or whether I would change. Eventually, the Lord was very kind. It took a period of 10 years. I made the switch from body to soul. Had 15 years as a pastor in Southwest London, and during that time became increasingly convinced that to be a good pastor, which I was not when I started, I needed to understand both scripture and people, and I was able to set aside a day a week to begin getting to grips really with how to make that connection more richly. That eventually is what led me here, and it's now the guts of what I teach.
Well, tell us a bit more about that. So you're giving it, why are you really passionate about that? Why do you think pastors really need to make sure they know people, not just the gospel in that sense?
Yeah, I suppose there's a number of ways of answering that. One is that the ministry that God gives to his pastors is a pastoral ministry. It's a shepherding ministry. And there's lots of places where that idea is filled out, whether in the Old Testament you have the God's condemnation of the shepherds in Ezekiel. When Paul's talking about the ministry that will really help the church in Thessalonica, which is a brilliant church doing so well, he says that they're to warn the idle, encourage the disheartened, and help the weak. So those are three distinct reasons why people might not be joining in the work that Paul says is good for everybody. There are people who are idle who need warning. There are people who are disheartened and they need encouraging. And there are people who are weak and they need help. And those are three very different responses to three very different people. If you warn someone who's disheartened, you make the problem worse. If you help someone who's idle, you make the problem worse. If you don't provide the help that a weak person needs in order to be able to do what you're asking them to do, they simply can't do it, doesn't matter how much you encourage them. That carries a very strong implication that if you're to be an effective pastor, you need to know whether you're talking to someone who's effectively disheartened, someone who lacks the ability without resource and help from outside, or someone who's stuck in sin. And they can look very similar. I take it in Thessalonica, those were three groups of people, and none of them were working. And rather than just give a blanket instruction, come on, pull your socks up, which might be what I would have done as a young pastor, he says there's more to it than that. So there's a Old Testament, New Testament. When we encounter God as individuals in Scripture, we find him to be capable of drawing very close to us in our situation. There are so many beautiful words given to us in the Psalms to experience a deeply personal relationship with God. And that the way that he relates to his people in a very personal way needs to be reflected in the way that pastors relate to their flock. So it's my privilege here to help people put everything else that's there in the curriculum to work. Tim spends a lot of time on preaching, the construction of sermons and Bible studies and what you might call slightly more formal set piece word ministry. And it's my privilege to help people think about the one-to-one word ministry, the interpersonal ministry. What are you going to do in a conversation with people? Yeah. That's so in the second year, we get people to sit down and have a conversation. Yeah. They actually spend 9 hours in conversation in little groups of three. Yeah. And it's so encouraging to read the reports of that. For many, it's the first time they've had that kind of conversation with people, but it's something that I very much hope will be a big part of their ministry. And it's not only because it's good in its own right, it's because as you grow to know better the individuals in that group that you're preaching to, your sermon takes on a much more personal feel. You know what proportion of the congregation are unemployed, and if they're unemployed, how long they've been unemployed, and if they've been unemployed for a long time, how they're responding to that. And you know about the real health issues that are affecting people's bodies and that will be a source of considerable anxiety in the week ahead. And so you're not just preaching about the sovereignty of God, you're preaching about God coming alongside us in all kinds of weakness. And it just helps us choose our words. It helps us make eye contact at the right time. It helps us pick up conversations after the sermon. We often want people to be talking meaningfully about the sermon. It's part and parcel, really, of a good all-round ministry.
It's a part of your role of continuing to grow in that yourself. You've had a bit of time. Study leave?
Yes.
You've been here a while at Oak Hill.
Yeah.
Which means you get some study leave. Tell us about some of the people listening here in ministry, different roles, maybe pastors, may not be, but maybe in full-time ministry. What have been some of the benefits you've seen looking back on sabbatical study leaves? And I think you'd say you'd be encouraging people to find some space for them. So
yeah. So I'm acutely conscious that lots of people might have a provision for study leave in a contract, or they suspect it would be possible if they were to pursue it. But when they start getting a little bit closer to the idea, they realize there's a huge amount to do to make it possible for you not to be doing your job for a period. And many ministers I know managed to carve out a month in a summer period or something like that. I suppose my encouragement from my own experience would simply be to say I found it so enriching to take time away from the norm. It so enriches what I do when I come back to the norm. And this was true of my sabbatical in 2012. Has been true of my study leave here. It helps me look at what I'm going to come back to do with fresh eyes. And I think that's been really, really actually life-changing for me and for ministry. So even though it seems impossibly difficult to work out who on earth is going to preach in all those weeks when I'm not going to be there, how is the team going to function? I think the reality is that many churches do manage to survive when the pastor eventually moves on and there's a gap, you know, an interregnum, as it's sometimes called. It is possible. There are people who can step up and it can be really good for them to do so. It is a huge amount of effort, but I've never spoken to a single minister, and I've spoken to many who've taken a sabbatical, have never spoken to a single one who said it wasn't worth the effort. Mm. They're so glad they did it. And yeah, that's been my experience too.
Sorry for interrupting you as you listen into Andrew, but we just want to let you know about a couple of short courses we've got coming up this summer, which you can sign up for. In June, we've got 2 26-hour language refresher retreats. They're held here at Oak Hill with our language teachers, Hebrew and Greek, and they aim to refresh your walk with the Lord alongside your biblical languages. So people who maybe studied previously, they want to come back and have a little bit of a refresher and a top up. Spend some time with others. You'll go through some chapters or a book of the Bible for this kind of that 26-hour period. Stay here at Oak Hill, our lovely grounds. Eat together, pray together, walk together. They've been great times of encouragement for people. So we've got those two language retreats in June. And then in July, we've got 2 summer intensive weeks. They're 1 week's modules, 1 week aspects of teaching, one on Islam and Christian-Muslim engagement, another on growing faith in children's, youth and families work with real expert practitioners. We've got Rob Scott teaching us in Islam. We've got Dr. Robin Barfield on growing faith. And again, you'll be mixing and mingling with students here at college, as well as alumni. Alumni get one course free every year, or other people just wanting to come for a bit of training, some top-up, some CPD, some ministerial development. We've known people who've got it paid for by their dioceses and their churches. So do reach out to them. They're all good value and great weeks of kind of a bit like what we've been listening to with Andrew, a little mini kind of study break, study leave, time to reflect on maybe looking at a topic you wouldn't otherwise look at. So all the information is on our website. As I said, alumni, you get one free course each year if you're not claimed one yet. But let's go back now, listen to Andrew and hear a bit more about what he's been up to. Most of your time, having chatted to you and read a bit about you, reported what you did, which we just thought would be really helpful for people listening in to hear about it. It seems like lots of them are themed in that way of helping you think both, how can I be listening better and understanding better about people, but also then how can I come back and help others do the same?
Yeah. So
maybe kind of give us the big picture kind of flavor. What did that kind of few months or so look like? What were you trying to do? Kind of what you're learning?
It was a huge privilege. I had 5 months. That's longer than I had as a pastor. I had one episode of one sabbatical as a pastor. That was 3 months long. It was wonderfully enriching and helpful. Huge privilege then to have a 5 month period, and I divided it up into 3 opportunities to travel and learn from people in different places. So first I went to South Africa. I had some friends there from years back. It was lovely to reconnect with them, but I went there particularly with the focus on trying to learn about how to have conversations where there are significant cultural divides between people. Mm. So one example that I learned from in that setting was that this idea of counseling and deliberate conversations has particularly grown up, and I'd learned it in a white American context. But obviously South Africa has all kinds of challenges about crossing very well known and very difficult, painful cultural divides. The people who have tried to grow in their understanding of how it is to have a church which crosses cultures have had to learn new questions that wouldn't occur to a white American to ask, or certainly not as importantly. And so I learned from that, and then from a period of time in Kenya on the way home, much more. And I think I grew in a sense that I could speak meaningfully across cultural divide. I think I'd felt very reticent to do that because I didn't know enough about how to really connect with people who are different from me in those respects. And just that time in Africa talking to people who thought about it and then trying it out really helped. I guess one of the things which I learned was that, of course, as I already knew, most of what you say is the same. It's the gospel. It's the same God who reveals himself universally to all people. So it's only in one sense, it's only the details that are different. But those details are vitally important. So, for example, in a Black African culture where people are growing up taught to listen first to parents and to ancestors, some of whom even may be dead, that they have a huge responsibility to live in a way that pleases the ancestors. If you are completely unaware that those influences are strong in someone's background, you don't take the opportunity to discover them and to learn about them, then the voice of God coming into that context is going to land differently, if it lands at all. So that's one small example. That was a great time. In the middle part, I went back to actually a place I'd been on my first study, back to Philadelphia, where I first learned all of this stuff about connecting the Bible with people, the riches of Christ and the realities of life. Christian Counseling Education Foundation. Some wonderful people there I reconnected with, had a month there. They lent me a study. I did some writing there, of which more later, I hope. But I'd spent a good length of time just sitting in a room or on a Zoom call with people in a conversation, trained, expert, professional, biblical counselors in conversation with a whole range of people with all kinds of different reasons for coming for counseling. That was so enriching. I learned so much from that. A real, real privilege to be able to do that. The final chunk was in Sydney, Australia, based at Moore College, which it was lovely to feel how warmly they feel towards us here at Oak Hill. They see themselves as a sister college. I mean, they felt very much like the bigger sister. It's a wonderful place to be and hang out, and Australia's beautiful. But particularly learning from some of the things they've done in their curriculum there at college and in the diocese to develop ministers' ability to minister reflectively, to be more aware of the choices they're making, to be able to learn more effectively from things that go well and things that don't go well, to be able to have good conversations with one another in peer groups among students at the college, and in particular something that the diocese has started now requiring for new appointments, pastoral supervision, which is the word they use for people who are trained to walk alongside ministers something like once a month as a place to reflect on and think together with how things are going, particular problems that are arising, new directions that might want to head out in. And that's excited me for a couple of reasons. One is because I think it's been really useful in helping ministries stay healthy rather than going off course and actually becoming damaging in some ways. But secondly, it helps ministries just keep going. We talk quite a bit about resilience, about the self-care of the minister, about how hard it is in some respects to do ministry. And these conversations do seem to have real proven value in helping build resilience and helping ministries be sustained in the long term. So I'll come back buzzing with ideas and thoughts about what it might look like to be part of some of the things happening here. There are lots of people engaging with the need to sustain ministry long term, lots of organizations, lots of people. So to try and learn more about what they're doing and to think whether Oak Hill has a part to play in that, whether we can link our alumni into what's already happening, whether to develop something in a slightly different direction, all kinds of thinking going on at the moment.
Tell us a little bit then about the preciseness of how does it work in Sydney? There's a different context in terms of the, particularly in the Anglican Church out in Australia. Yeah, let's get that right.
That's right.
The Anglican Church in Australia and particularly in Sydney with its very strong evangelical base.
Yes.
But it'd be great. Yeah, people listening in, paint a picture of what it looks like. If you're training for ministry in Australia, you've possibly been to Moore College, then what happens next? And how is that different to what happens here?
You're right to say there are many differences, of course. And it was a wonderful feeling to travel through Sydney, which is a large diocese, and to reflect that almost certainly the Anglican churches we were driving past or seeing on the street corner were evangelical. You know, that's the norm because of the wonderful history there. And of course, you know, they've had an evangelical archbishop for a number of years. And that has, I'm sure, not always been an easy job for the archbishop. But it does mean that there has been a very strong connection for many years between the Evangelical Theological College and the diocese as a whole. And that's tremendously enriching for both the college and the diocese. And the college is strong. It's a recognized resource for the whole diocese, not just for the training of ministers, but for the retraining and the continuing education of ministers and for the training of lay people. And so the archbishop has said, I won't license anybody in a new job unless they have pastoral supervision in place. That's not been an entirely easy debate, and it's not been entirely straightforward.
How's that different to curacy? Is there a distinction to it?
Oh, yeah. So they still have curates there. I mean, very much so. Curacy is where you're learning from an incumbent minister. Your responsibilities are intentionally limited. And over the years of your curacy, you're becoming the kind of person developing the kinds of experience and hopefully wisdom which enable you to start out as a vicar. The pastoral supervision, and that may not prove to be the best title for it in the UK. It's a particular model that they use. But the principle is that there's someone outside the church who's not part of the ministry of the church. They should know what ministry involves and know what a minister needs to be and to do, but there's someone who's trained to be a good companion, meeting with you once every month or couple of months, And each time the minister brings a question or an issue or something that's come up in the life of the church or in their own thinking, and the pastor supervisor is someone with a trained professional framework to talk it through with, bounce things through. And that's invaluable, for example, where you've got a difficult issue, which is you're not sure what to do. You're not even sure who to talk to in the life of the church because so many people are involved in it in some way. Maybe it even involves one of your leadership team, and it's really hard to talk about those things with other people on the leadership team. Well, this is a ready-made. You know you're going to be seeing your supervisor in a couple of weeks. I'll bounce it around with them. So it is quite different from curacy, but it struck me as immensely valuable. And of the ministers we spoke to who've engaged in pastoral supervision already before it became a requirement, they found it hugely enriching, hugely helpful.
As you've kind of been chewing on it, talking to people around it, have you got any ideas of what this could look like in the UK?
I'm in a number of conversations with a number of different people. There's a lot of enthusiasm for it. There are a lot of things a little bit like it that are already happening, which is wonderful. A lot of need. I know when I shared the idea with students here, as I was still fresh with enthusiasm for what I'd learned, it was obvious that a fair proportion of our graduates would like to see something like this in place. And as I talked to other people who were involved in supporting ministers, none of them think they're doing all that's needed. They can all see that the particularities of this, which is, it's not responding to a particular problem. So you're going to a consultant to solve a problem. It's there all the time as a kind of permanent feature of ministry. I'd love in some way it to be the kind of thing that becomes normal in a package that a church will offer to a minister. We'll give you this amount of money as a stipend. This provision for accommodation, and there'll be, say, £1,000 in the budget for supervision because we think it'll help you minister to us in a good way, and we think we'll get you in post for longer. It's a kind of benefit that I think should repay the church and the pastor.
It's taking some of the requirement to organise that off the, as I can speak in some ways in my own context, so I've been pastoring a church for 8 years long, so four others, but that's been often a question we've kind of had of, Where can we go to for a bit more of that kind of that mentoring, that help, that kind of conversation around the broader assets of ministry? And it feels a lot of the incumbency, we're in FIC context, so there's definitely people out there who we can speak to, and we do speak to, but probably more in the kind of, less in the regular sense, more in the, I've got a particular question or issue, so I'll go to them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I do feel like what I found is I'm trying to go, right, who do I know? Who can I speak to? Who can I find? And
there
seems like there could be some wisdom in the kind of, the training of it, of people who can do it, and in slightly in the opening up of access to it, so it's not just kind of
that's
who you know who is 20 years on from your ministry.
That's right. And of course, one of the issues people recognize, I think, and have written about, that pastoring can feel quite lonely, particularly if it's done in certain models where you don't quite feel comfortable building deep friendships with the people who you're also trying to pastor. And I think there's some good questions to ask about that, but it's a reality that many pastors feel. And when things are starting to go wrong, of course, it's then more effort to go and find somebody. You've got to set aside time to do that research and build a relationship from scratch with somebody who'll be helpful. And a lot of people who could benefit from help and have got to a point where they know they could benefit from help actually don't quite get to the point of being able to find help that is actually helpful. And so to have it more as a norm that it's just there, because you've got a contract that you know they're going to be there at the end of June at a particular time. It's no extra work. And you've already built a relationship of trust and confidence and understanding about how to get the most out of the time together. I think it's got a lot to offer.
And yet slightly removed from I can only speak to our own model. We're plurality of elders, four of us serve together. And yet when we're dealing and wrestling with complex pastoral situations, you're all inside it in different ways. And you know your people in certain ways, which add complexities.
Yeah.
So actually, I can very much see the benefit of having somebody who knows you knows of your church, but doesn't necessarily intimately, as in they care about it, but not in the same way you do, as being a benefit. You can get some good, not quite independent advice, but wise, slightly removed advice.
Yeah.
Feels like it's just the sort of thing which people need to be able to keep going and keep going on in ministry.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And in a context where you've got a group of elders, you can have a similar kind of thing that can work for the group as a group. You know, it can be done individually, and that's the model I've seen most of and learned most about. But it can work in a group context too.
Yeah,
Yeah, definitely.
You mentioned briefly being in Philadelphia doing some writing. I'm hopeful if you're a regular listener to Deep Roots, we'll have you back on to talk about this particularly. But give us a little bit of flavour of the sort of, you did a bit of writing of your study leave as well.
Yeah, for a long time, I've been hoping to find time to write a course for church small groups to give them an experience of deepening their conversations. We wrote a course with Helen Thorne a few years ago called Real Change, which was about understanding some of the dynamics of how God changes me in the ordinary things of life. And as a course of small groups, we're talking about that, but we're talking about ourselves with other people, which is many people have found really helpful. This is about then, how do I have a conversation that's about you and what's going on for you? And the starting point is, I need help. So that we can approach this whole process with humility and a sense of our own neediness, and that this is brothers and sisters walking together through life. It's not about an expert. It's not about all becoming counsellors for each other in any sort of professional sense at all. It's about deepening our Christian friendship so that our conversations can talk about what's really going on inside. And there's a lot in the New Testament about encouraging one another, praying for one another, loving one another. I think it's probably true to say that in a number of British churches, we've slightly deprioritized the one another aspects of ministry and replaced it with an expectation that the minister or the ministry team will do the ministry. This is about a grassroots level kind of ministry to try and get Christians talking a little bit more depth with each other about what's really going on. So we're all the ministers for one another. Now I know that already happens in every time a small group meets. There's encouragement and help and prayer and so on. It's a resource. If groups want to use it to try and help them get that conversation a little bit deeper, a little bit more onto spiritual things, even to feel comfortable, a little bit more normal talking about issues of sin as well as suffering and so on.
Great. And that's out next year?
God willing, point in 27, yeah.
Some point in 27. Well, yeah. Great. Well, we'll get you back on, definitely, to talk about that. But Andrew, thanks for joining us. One last kind of question. Obviously, we're sitting here to podcast with Oak Hill. People may be listening with lots of experience of Oak Hill or not, or thinking about study. It's not unique. Our kind of integration of pastoral study and learning alongside theology. But what kind of your elevator pitch of why having them both taught alongside each other is really important in kind of for people who they want theology, but going, you need more than just kind of the church history and the systematics and the biblical studies. Why do we say it really matters to do it alongside as well?
All of that other stuff is vitally important, but God gives it to us for people. His great solution for the universe is not to fill libraries and not even to fill heads with knowledge. It is to call people into relationship with himself. So unless we're putting all of that knowledge into the business of growing our relationship with God, and as we grow our relationship with God, we're growing our relationships with each other. But we're kind of missing what all of that other stuff is really about.
There you go. So if you want to find out more about any of our programs and courses, there's a whole range of them, short courses all the way through to a relatively new master's in Christian leadership, which is doing some of this, kind of reflecting on how we lead people, how we pastor people in whatever context that might be. You've got a whole range of people doing that. So thanks for joining us on Deep Roots. Thanks for being with us. Andrew, if you've got any questions for Andrew, any topics you want us to cover, do get in touch with us. You can reach out to us on social media or email communications@oakhill.ac.uk. But we'll see you again soon for another episode of Deep Roots.